The health of this branch is dramatically linked to remaining connected to the plant. It seems very obvious, but it might need to be repeated. See, the health of a particular branch is certainly linked to remaining connected to the plant. Last week we started talking about three words that are going to be and are already very, very important to the life of our church together. We talked about connecting, growing, serving. And with each one of those words, we pointed out that they end in the same three letters, ing, making them present participles, which talk about continuous action. We are intentionally saying that our words are not connect, grow, serve, because we never want to be a church that goes, hey, I can point out the time that I connect Ed, or here's evidence of how I once grew, or I served before, but now I'm letting somebody else do that. No, 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 no. We are about connecting, growing, serving, continuous action, present participle-ing. And this morning, as we dive a little deeper into this idea of connecting, we're going to be looking at John 15. If you have a Bible, you want to follow along, John 15. If you want to follow along on the screen, whatever is easiest for you. Jesus is speaking here, and he says the following. He says, I am the true vine, and my Father is the gardener. He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit, while every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes so that it will be even more fruitful. You are already clean because of the word I have spoken to you. Remain in me, as I also remain in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me. I am the vine. You are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. If you do not remain in me, you are like a branch that is thrown away and withers. Such branches are picked up, thrown into the fire, and burned. If you remain in me and my words remain in you, ask whatever you wish and it will be done for you. This is to my Father's glory, that you bear much fruit, showing yourselves to be my disciples. As the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. Now remain in my love. It can be argued that the first 10 verses of chapter 15 of John are referring to all three of our words. Connecting, growing, serving. It talks about being fruitful, bearing much fruit, which goes into this idea of serving, but your ability to be in a place where you're growing, bearing much fruit, requires you to be in a healthy relationship with God, and you are growing, but your ability to be in a healthy, growing relationship with God requires you to be connected to the vine. So an argument can be made that John 15 is a great passage for all three of the words. But as I mentioned earlier, this morning we're focusing on one. Connecting. And as we talk about this idea of connecting, we need to pay attention to some of the words that Jesus is using as he teaches. Now, there's a temptation for us to jump right into how. How do we connect? Because as a church, we say this, we are committed to connecting people in significant, authentic relationships with Jesus and with one another. And there's a temptation for us to jump right away into how. How do we do this? How is important, but it must always follow why. The why has to come first. If you don't believe me, ask a 3-year-old. Why always comes first, and it's healthy. Why is connecting so important? And again, look at the words of Jesus. Because he says a couple of very, very important things. He says, I am the true vine. Here's the problem. We are separated from Jesus' words by 2,000 years. And over those 2,000 years, much is lost when it comes to understanding the culture that it was spoken originally in. So Jesus says, I am the true vine. And we go, oh, okay, that's really kind of creative, artistic language, and it paints a picture, and it does. But we lose some of the significance of what Jesus is saying because we've been separated by 2,000 years of culture and history. When Jesus said, I am, that's huge. Remember, Jesus is speaking to a predominantly Jewish audience. In a Jewish culture 2,000 years ago, I am carried a lot of weight. It should be noted that the Gospel of John is the gospel that gives the most attention to the divinity of Jesus. John goes to great lengths to point out that Jesus is God. Matthew, Mark, Luke do somewhat, John tremendously so, which is why throughout the Gospel of John, you'll see Jesus making I am statements. I am the way, the truth, the life. I am the bread of life. I am is repeated throughout because Jesus is claiming, I am God. Remember, we first hear about this I am back in Exodus at the burning bush. There's Moses. He's going face to face with the reality of God calling him. And God says, I want you, Moses, to go back to Egypt. I want you to deliver the people out of bondage. And Moses goes, well, who should I tell them is sending me? And God says, tell them I am is sending you. And from that point forward, the phrase I am is a holy, sacred title that would be ascribed only to God. And so when Jesus begins the 15th chapter by saying, I am, his Jewish audience was tremendously aware of the weight of those two words. So why is it important to be in a connecting place with God, with Jesus? Because he's God. And here we are at church and we kind of take that for granted. No, again, why is it important to be connecting with Jesus? Because he's God. I am. But then he says, I am the true vine. And here again, we lose something because we're separated by 2,000 years. Israel was referred to from time to time as the vine. And the Hebrew people put great stock in that their hope, their security rested in their identity as the nation of Israel because Israel was the vine. And all of a sudden, Jesus shows up and says this, I am, got their attention, the true vine. And otherwise, he tells this Jewish audience, Israel, a poor foreshadowing of who I am. If you put all of your hope for peace and for joy and for love in your national identity, that is counterfeit compared with who I am. You know, I was a history major and in college. I've always loved history. And it always amazes me how things change so dramatically and don't change at all. Because 2,000 years later, we still put our hope for joy and peace and love. We continue to put our hope into counterfeit options. As if a national identity, as if prosperity or safety or health is the answer to what we need. As if that is going to be the source of our hope and our joy and our peace and our love. We continue to do just what they were doing 2,000 years ago. And so when Jesus goes, I am the true vine. I am the only way for you to know the things that you, your heart so longs for. Why is connecting with Jesus so important? Because he says, I am the true vine. I love Advent. I really do. I love the sights and the sounds and the smells and the gatherings. I love coming to church during the season of Advent. And that was certainly true this past year. Loved it. Usually, the high point of kind of the coming to church part of Advent is the Christmas Eve service. We've been waiting for the coming of Jesus. We've kind of had things a little darker as we're waiting for the light to come. And then Christmas Eve comes and it's beautiful and we sing the songs and we light the candles. If you were here on Christmas Eve, it was a great night. That being said, this year for me, Christmas Eve was not the highlight. Christmas morning was. Christmas this year fell on a Sunday, so we had church. We didn't expect a lot of people, and we had 40 to 50 people. But I gotta tell you, if you were here, you're probably in agreement with me. It was kind of the highlight of the season. Here's what happened if you weren't here. We were still in the round with the manger in the middle, with the cross hanging over the manger. Beautiful cross and cradle imagery. And then we sang some Christmas songs, and then there were four candles on each corner of the manger, the four Advent candles. And I said, hey, if there's any kids here this morning that want me to help me light the candles, come on up. And so four kids came up, and we took turns lighting each candle, and we talked about what each one meant. The first one we lit was the hope candle, and I said, hey, are you with me that our world is in desperate need of hope? And everybody there, oh yeah, we are in desperate need of hope. And then we did the joy candle. And I said, you know, in the evangelical community, we get all hot and bothered about the difference between joy and happiness, happiness and joy. They're not the same. Problem is, if you read your Bible in Hebrew or in Greek, the words are pretty much the same. Now, granted, there's some difference. And so we kind of said, let's think of joy as just kind of significant happiness. And we go, is our world in need of some happiness that's significant? We're like, oh, yes, we are. And then we had the love candle. And I said, you know, one of my favorite ways to look at the idea of love is one of the Hebrew words for love, and it's hesed. And this is one of my favorite descriptions of hesed love. The consistent, ever faithful, relentless, constantly pursuing, lavish, extravagant, unrestrained, furious love of our Father God. I go, boy, we need that. We need some hesed. And then there was the peace candle. We lit that one. And we said, you know, in our world, we think of peace as absence of war. And that's kind of peace, but it's not the biblical understanding of peace. Peace in the Bible, the shalom, is talking about wholeness. Looking back to the very beginning, that when the world was created, God said it was good. Hebrew word for good is tov, meaning good, beautiful, functioning just the way he wants. And then sin enters in, and that which was beautiful and functional becomes dysfunctional and not beautiful. And the rest of the story of scripture is God restoring shalom, restoring wholeness to a creation that was once tov and is now broken. He's restoring it to beauty and function. This is what peace is. And do we need that? And we're all sitting there that Christmas morning going, oh, yes, we need that. And so we lit all four of those candles. And then we sang more Christmas songs. And then it was time to light the Christ candle. And manger was filled with six candles. And I said, let's light the candles this way this morning. I'd invite six people just to come on up and light these candles. But here's how I want you to do it. Pick one of these four: hope, joy, peace, love. What is the thing that you this season feel you need the most, or we need the most, our world needs the most? And people came up and they just took a candle and they walked to the candle that for them is like, oh boy, do we need this? And they lit it and then they shared why this was important to them and they lit one of the center candles. And it just filled up with light. And then we had this moment, we looked and we go, we need hope and we need joy and we need peace and we need love. And we are acknowledging on this Christmas morning that we only find it in one place, and it's Jesus, and he's come. And then we just celebrate about the fact that, wait, because he's come, we have. hope and joy and love and peace. We have this because of Jesus. And then as we finished the service, we all got up out of our seats and we just surrounded as a little family around the manger and we sang Joy to the World. And it was beautiful because we were acknowledging, oh, we need Jesus and he's come. I am the true vine. If you're looking for hope and joy and peace and love anywhere other than Jesus, Jesus says, I am the true vine. And a little bit later on, he says this, apart from me, you can do nothing. At first glance, completely depressing. I mean, come on, really? I can do nothing. Oh. First glance, a little depressing. You're a loser and so am I. A little depressing. But at second glance, it goes from being a little depressing to a little encouraging. You mean everything working out is not dependent on me? Oh, that's good news. Because I'm a mess sometimes. And my discipleship is inconsistent. But what you're saying is, well, apart from me, I can do nothing. Oh, yeah. But that means it's also not dependent upon me. But then on third glance, it becomes one of those, wow, I get to be part of something amazing. Okay, so apart from you, I can do nothing. It's not dependent upon me, but because of you, because your son has come, and through his work, in his birth, his life, his death, his resurrection, the fact that he's coming again, that his spirit remains with us, because of that, I get to be part of something you're doing? Oh, that's really fantastic. George MacDonald was a mentor of sorts for C.S. Lewis. And some of you have heard me read this before, but George MacDonald wrote this. We should confess ourselves poor creatures, for that is the beginning of being great men and great women. To persuade ourselves that we are something when we are nothing is terrible loss. To confess that we are nothing is to lay the foundation of being something. Oh, confess ourselves poor creatures. Confess the fact that I cannot do it on my own. I must remain connected with Jesus, because when I am, oh my goodness, what happens? And then Jesus goes a little further and he says, remain in me. And we'll come back to this idea of remain in me because it requires action on our part. He has said he will remain with us, but he's also saying very clearly we are to remain in him, and that requires some action on our part. So we've talked a little bit about why. Why is it important? Why is it important to be connected and remain connected with Jesus? Well, because he's God, and he is the true vine, and he is the only way to hope and peace and joy and love. When we try to graft ourselves in on other vines, we might have temporary success only to wither later. But in Jesus, the true vine, oh, there's hope and joy and love and peace. That's why it is so important. The question then becomes, how? Here's the problem. If I were to ask you, how do you connect with Jesus? So there's 130 or so of us in here this morning. And if I were to parade you up here one at a time, give you the microphone, say, how do you connect with Jesus? There's 130 some odd of us. We'd probably have 130 some odd different ways we connect, which is great. We're individuals and God has created each one of us uniquely and we connect differently. If my dad was here this morning and I go, Dad, how do you connect with Jesus? He'd say, my morning prayer walks. Every morning he hikes for, I don't know, 2 to 5 miles and he prays. And he prays. And it is the highlight of his day. Because he has time with Jesus. He's praying about everything that comes into his mind. If I were to pull my wife up here, I go, how do you connect with Jesus? She would probably talk about her morning routine. she gets up and she has a whole routine that she goes through. If I were to share my way, one of the ways that I connect with Jesus is in the preparation of a sermon. I mean, I love preaching. I think I love preparing to preach more. Just that whole process of listening and wondering and being challenged and encouraged, that process for me is this huge connection for me with my Father. If I were to ask you, you'd come up with lots of different ways, and that's great. But how do we, as a church, connect with Jesus and with one another? One of the primary ways, not the only way, but one of the primary ways is Sunday mornings. What we do on Sunday mornings is designed intentionally for connecting. When you come in, there's a greeter, there's an usher. Why are they there? To help get you connected with one another and get you in here so that you can spend time doing what we do over the hour or so that we do our service. And just about everything we do in a Sunday morning service is for the purpose of connecting. The singing, the reading of scripture, praying, having people share, the sermon, the offering, communion, the announcements, everything that we do in a service, one of the primary roles is for connecting, to give you an opportunity to connect with Jesus. It's why we do this. And then after the service, just about everything out there is for the purpose of connecting. There's food. It actually helps connect because sometimes if you're sitting with somebody, there's that awkward, I'm just going to stare at Nick and Nick is staring at me and we don't know what to say. But if there are eggs, if there is coffee, it helps. There are round tables for a reason. Talking around round tables is easier than in rectangle tables. There is a whole section in the back corner that is set up for young families because we want them to spend time connecting with one another. Be on the lookout because in the weeks to come, one of the walls in there is going to become our connecting wall. Why is it there? To help us do what? Connect. There's a Have We Met table. Why is it there? So people can connect. One of the primary ways we connect as a church is Sunday mornings. Is it the only way? No. Is it probably the primary way we do it? Yes. And you might be going, oh, wait, what about small groups? And what about, slow down. Next week we're going to be talking about growing, and we'll be getting into that in a big way. But one of the primary ways that we connect is on a Sunday morning. Also, one of the other primary ways that we connect is with our threes. We talk a lot about 3-2-1 here. What is it about? We identify there are three people in our lives. They're currently not following Jesus. We've already got a relationship with them. Our job, encourage them, bless them, love them, learn their story. If they ask, we're willing to tell our story. It's connecting. This Wednesday, some of you will be going to Singing in the Rain. Somebody was wondering, why are we going to Singing in the Rain? What's the theological significance of Singing in the Rain? I'm not sure, although I could probably come up with one. Primary purpose of going to Singing in the Rain? Connecting? A chance to go to a movie together? A good movie at that? A chance to go grab Mel's Diner before or after with people and just talk. Or try this one on. It is a great chance to invite one of your threes. Sometimes it's awkward to go, oh, I don't know how to get them to church. Ha ha, let's switch it. Let's take the church to them. You want to go see Singing in the Rain? I'm going to be there with a bunch of my friends. We have a fundraiser coming up at Topgolf. Primary purpose of the fundraiser is to raise money so we can go serve in Mexico well. That being said, there's another purpose to it. Paul, roughly how many people are registered right now for the Topgolf fundraiser? 146. I'd be willing to bet that about a third of that 146 are Community Covenant Church people. Only 28? 28 of the 146 are Community Covenant Church people, which means all the rest are all about connecting. I was in charge of getting six people. I invited my threes. Getting them here might be difficult. Inviting them to go hit a golf ball? Sure. They go, can our wives come? I go, yes. I call Jen. Guess what, Jen? You're going to Topgolf. And so our six are two of my threes and their spouses and my wife. But here's the best part. We're going to spend the whole time just connecting and hitting golf balls and laughing at one another. But here's what else I know. The group of six next to me is Kevin and Mona Willis and who they're bringing. I call them Willis. They got married yesterday. The Leamys are right next to us. So my threes are now going to be connecting with them. On the other side of me are going to be Jim and Wendy Calton and the people they're inviting. And they're going to be connecting. Why do we do things like this? Because we want to connect with our threes. And ultimately, we want our threes to be people that acknowledge that hope and joy and peace and love come only through the person of Jesus Christ. And if it takes singing in the rain or hitting a golf ball to do it, then God bless the activity. One of the primary ways that we do our connecting is with our threes and on Sunday mornings. For years, I served in youth and family ministries. And I was at a church in Washington for over 16 years. And we had a fairly large junior high and high school program, about 100 kids if you added them together. We'd run our midweek program all the way through the school year. When it got to the summer, we would change things up because we needed to change things, mostly for our volunteers who were given so much of their time. And so this is what we did during the summer. No midweek program. It was just Sunday mornings and then our mission trips and camps and such. Just Sunday mornings. And we told our students, come to church, come to the second service, and afterwards, we'll all go out to round table. On us. We had to put a significant amount of money into our round table pizza budget there. Why? Because connecting was very, very important. And so we'd go out to round table, and we'd get there at round table, we'd order the pizza and such, and then we'd start asking questions. And there'd be three questions that we would ask the students and the adults that were there. First one, what was one song from that morning service that was important to you? Maybe it has history for you. Maybe you just enjoyed singing it. Maybe it was some of the lyrics just really resonated with you. What was one song from that morning that was really important? What was one thing from the sermon that challenged you, encouraged you, ticked you off? And where was one time that you were more aware of the presence of God? The first Sunday we did that, we told the kids, hey, come to church, and then we'll all go out to round table. We all went to round table, we ordered the pizza, we get there, and I start asking these questions. Here's a look. Oh, there wasn't a word being shared. And it wasn't just the students, it was the adults too, all kind of going. And it occurred to me that we showed up at church, but we weren't real present. We showed up, but we weren't very intentional about connecting with the God that we claimed we worshiped. I said, don't worry, come back next week. I guarantee I'm going to ask the same three questions. And over the course of that summer, the conversation changed. As young people and adults started talking about, oh, there was this one line in this one song that as soon as I saw it up on the screen, I go, ooh, that was really important for me. I need to pay attention to that. We got into significant conversations about what was taking place in the sermon. And boy, when you started hearing the stories of when they were most aware of the presence of God, I did not know that Daryl was going to sing Open the Eyes of My Heart this morning. So we started singing. I started laughing. Because I instantly remembered, well, one, he told us to, when you're comfortable, close your eyes, to sing Open My Eyes. But the part that made me laugh was that Open the Eyes of My Heart. So I remember I was at this camp years ago, probably 20-some-odd years ago. I had a group of junior high students with me. And it was the last night of camp, and we're in this amphitheater. And I was just one of those places, I was just my eyes closed and I'm just prayerfully singing, not even aware of the fact that there's 250 junior highers around me. I'm just me and Jesus, and I'm singing. And we start singing, "Open the eyes of my heart, Lord," and I'm singing it with my eyes closed. And as I'm singing, "Open the eyes of my heart," with my eyes closed, I start laughing at the fact that I'm now singing, "Open the eyes," with my eyes closed. And I start into this conversation with Jesus, completely unaware there's 200 plus junior hires. I said, no, Jesus, I want to see you. I want you to open my eyes, and I want to look up onto that stage, and I want to see you. Not just the idea of, I want to see you. And I start laughing because I'm about ready to see Jesus. And I kid you not, this is what I said. "Okay, God, ready or not?" As if we're playing hide and go seek. I'm suddenly playing hide and go seek with God. And I remember saying, "Okay, God, ready or not?" As if he needs more preparation for this grand moment. And I go, "Okay, God, ready or not?" And my head's still down, and I open my eyes, and I'm looking straight down, because I come to this realization, I'm about ready to look forward, and I'm gonna see something I've never seen before, and I'm fully confident of, and I slowly look up, and I didn't see anything. But here's the thing, it didn't matter. Because in that moment, I was more aware that God was present than at any other time in my life. And whether I saw it or not, it made no difference to me in that moment, because I had this unshakable confidence that God, in all of his mercy and holiness and love, was present there. And so if I were to go out to the round tables this morning and sit with you and start asking you round table questions, what would the nature of the conversation look like? What was one song that resonated with you this morning? Too often our discussion about, "I liked the music this morning," or "I didn't." What was one song that you paid attention to this morning that resonated with one way with you? What was one thing from the sermon that challenged, encouraged you this morning? "I like the sermon. I didn't like the sermon." Okay, let's go a little deeper than that. When were you most aware of the presence and love of God this morning? I remember looking back at the time with those students. It's funny because two of those students are here this morning. As we would talk on those Sunday afternoons at round table, I knew what the staff had done leading up to the service to create a space for people to connect with God. In perfect preparation at best, but we tried. The question is, what did the students bring to the gathering? Remember, Jesus said, "Remain in me." That requires action on our part. He's done his work. The incarnation, the resurrection, and he's given us his spirit. He's done his work, a work that continues. He will remain. What are we doing? How are we on a Sunday morning, one of the primary ways to connect, are we being intentional going, "I want to be present this morning and allow God's spirit to work in me so that I can leave on a Sunday going, this is how I connected." We're going to try on our end to provide opportunities for connecting. We're going to continue to work on that, but we need you to work at it too. And that includes me, because I sit right there on a Sunday morning, and sometimes I can just get caught up in the going through the motions and, I need to be going, "Okay, God, what is the word you have for me this morning?" Through one of your songs, through the sermon, maybe just being aware that you're here. We are committed to connecting people in significant, authentic relationship with Jesus and with other people. Amen.